It's episode 248 of the Kaiju Podcast. Exponential growth is here as we go from power of 1 to 2 to 3. But unfortunately, we don't have the power of 3 here today. Chris Charlton is on an aeroplane heading somewhere, I assume home, all on his lonesome with his two children. So we wish him luck in that. I think he's going home anyway. He said it was a 13-hour journey. Today we do have Jason Gibson.
Yeah, that's me.
That's right. He's here. Why don't you show off some of your amazing jazz scatting skills, Jason?
It's a scat man. Yeah, no. We're not going there.
No? Beat-a-bop-beat-a-bop-bop-bop-beat-a-bop. Come on.
Nah.
Play for the crowd. So we were just talking about the fact that the Scatman music is still quite popular in Japan, despite it being extremely old, and obviously because of like the speed of the lyrics, very difficult for a lot of people to understand, except for obviously the beat-a-bop-beat-a-bop parts. Scatman.
Yeah.
Listen to that, children.
Do it.
That's right. It will change your life. You know what else is going to change your life? VR. VR is real. It's real.
Virtually real.
No, it's really real, according to all the posters we saw just 2 days ago.
They were really trying to say, you're really there. By definition, it's virtual. You are not really there. But hey, you know, it's cool.
That's right. So what we're talking about here is the Shinjuku VR Zone, which is run by Bandai Namco. I can't even remember when we did this, but we did have a kind of report on a pop-up store in the Tokyo area of Odaiba that featured a couple of different VR experiences. So I talked about like a horror experience and like a fear of heights challenge kind of thing going on there. This is much more of, I think they're kind of here to stay.
It's a permanent installation. It's a building. They built this thing.
It's a full-on building. I mean, obviously, if things go south, it looks like they could probably just turn it into something else pretty easily. But all you'd have to do is just
nightclub.
Just scrape the name. That's true. With plenty of private booths as well. Bandai Namco, I guess the pop-up store was pretty successful, so they decided to make a full-on building, like we said, just off of the Toho Cinema's gigantic structure.
That's right behind it.
It's like to the side. It depends on where you come from, right?
I suppose that's true.
If you head like straight down the road, then it's to the left, but if you're like me and coming from the Seibu Shinjuku station, then it's directly on the way. So, that's all. Nobody listening will understand. Maybe
play Yakuza, they might.
That's right. Yeah. If you play the Yakuza series, then the plaza to Toho Cinemas is pretty prominent. It's where like the Sega arcade usually is. The VR zone is right in that plaza. So, anyway, you go in there, you have to get advance tickets. There are tickets available at the door, but, you're kind of taking a risk because if reservations for a certain, hour fill up, then those tickets are only available for, if reservations are canceled. You order tickets online, and you can order up to a month in advance, I believe. You go in, you can order starting from any hour block, but once you're in, you're in. So they can't, like, kick you out. Doesn't matter how long you stay. We were there, what, until 11. 3?
Yeah, we got there about 11, which is about an hour after it opened. And I think they were still selling tickets at the time we got there.
Yes.
But yeah, we were there till like 3. Yeah, so like 4 hours.
Yeah, and that was kind of out of necessity because we only experienced four different things with the VR, but that took about 4 hours.
4 hours, yeah, and each ride was probably only about like 3 minutes, maybe. Yeah, five minutes.
2 to 5 minutes, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, so let's talk about it. When you get there, like I said, you get a ticket. If you ordered online, then you're going to have a 4-ticket set, and the 4 tickets are kind of divided into color groups, and the VR activities are divided as well. But there didn't really seem to be any clear demarcation of like area or type of activity.
The coloring groups didn't really like seem to have a theme going on.
Yeah, even like popularity. I mean, I guess it kind of seemed like there was one super popular thing and then a couple of other like less popular things, but that was about it.
Yeah.
So anyway, there was red, blue, yellow, and green. So red ticket, the red ticket items were the Hospital Escape Terror, which we talked about last time I went. Kind of you're strapped to a wheelchair and you have a flashlight and you got to solve puzzles. And it's a cooperative experience. Then there's also the Hanechari, which means winged bicycle. And last one is the Jungle of Despair, which is a dinosaur survival game. So we went to the Hanechari.
Which is pretty good.
Yeah.
I had a really good time. I would say that was probably my favorite one.
Why don't you talk about that then? You just ran up the cliff.
Oh, it was great. No, so we get all strapped in and set up, and they say, okay, you can go. And I'm looking around me, and I see, you know, we're in a group of 4 people, with 2 guys we didn't know and us 2. And I'm looking around, and you guys are all like timidly, like, oh, can we go? What's going to happen? I'm like, well, screw this. And I just start pedaling as fast as I can. I'm because you're looking at like basically your bicycle. It's got a little board going off a cliff. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to run off the board and I'm going to like soar down from this cliff. And I'm like, no, that's not what happens. You get like out on the edge of the board and I'm pedaling as fast as I can. So I'm going pretty fast. And I get on the edge of the board and it just breaks and you just drop straight down.
Although, let me just interject here. The silly thing here is that pedaling does not actually make you go faster. Pedaling was for vertical movement. You pedal to go up. You stop pedaling to go down.
Right. I mean, except at this little beginning takeoff area. Anyways. So, in the controls, you would pedal to go up, stop pedaling to descend. You would push forward on your stick to go faster, pull back on your stick to go slower. And then you could turn left and right. And that was about it. But yeah, I was expecting to sort of like majestically glide down from this cliff. And instead we just sort of like had a dead drop until we get to the bottom. And you were saying something about how like you sort of thought it would be like one of those tropes where you would fall straight down and right at the end sort of pull up into a glide.
Right.
And it wasn't even that either. It was just like, okay, now you're suddenly hovering at the bottom. Stop. And now you're hovering and now you can go. Which was kind of like, eh. Like, the beginning was kind of, But after that, it was really fun. It was just sort of like a scenic vistas flying through natural beauty sort of thing, I guess. But I sort of just took it as like an obstacle course. I was just going as fast as I could, dodging through tunnels, and there was waterfalls. And then you get to a point where there's like these 2 sort of dilapidated giant stone like aqueducts on either side of you, and then you start flying through those, and those sort of like start crashing down on your head, and then you get sucked up into this giant sky vortex and sent to this castle, and then the ride's over. And I don't know, I thought it was really fun because I had a lot of fun sort of like zooming through the tunnels and stuff like that. That was really fun.
Yeah, it was pretty fun maneuvering. So just for explanation of the whole process. So you have your tickets, you line up. We waited probably 45 minutes for this one. Mm-hmm. it was our second to last experience. But then you go up. Each kind of VR activity had its own different rig setup. So this one was specifically set up like a standing bicycle, except that instead of regular handles, you had they were more like bicycle handles than a flight stick, but it was kind of a amalgamation of the two. But anyway, yeah, then the staff will strap on the VR headset, but before you can do that, you have to put on a special face mask to prevent, you know, germs or whatever. And
just, oh, yeah, the eye condom.
Yeah, yeah. And just to make it easier for them to wipe down afterwards. But, yeah, because they have to wipe it between each use, obviously. So, yeah, they'll do that. They strap it on. Sometimes you have special gear that you have to add, whether it's like a little wrist position indicator, or various other things. Anyway, so yeah, we flew through the aqueducts and the pools, and there were some minor annoying moments when the staff was trying to forcibly guide us.
That was a little bit more than minor.
Yeah.
I kind of was getting pretty frustrated with them when they kept doing that.
Yeah, like, I'm trying to turn left or right, and I can clearly feel a hand, like, on top of my own trying to pull the stick. I'm like, dude, just let me go. It is a 2 to 5 minute experience, like I said, it doesn't matter if you crash or anything like that. There are no game overs here because that would just completely spoil the experience. So I crashed like once and it just like poofs me back right in the same spot. So, no problem there, but yeah, it was pretty nice. I liked seeing like the heads of giant statues in the water and everything. Pretty cool stuff. So that was the red ticket. Then we moved on to the blue ticket items, which, well, we're kind of going out of order. I'm just going in the color order on the website.
Ah, whatever.
It's yeah. Fine. Yeah, this was actually our last one that we did. So the choices were Gundam VR Daiba Assault, Evangelion VR The Throne of Souls, or Dragon Ball VR Master of the Kamehameha. So this one actually does have kind of a...
Yeah, looking back on it, I kind of feel like I should have done the Dragon Ball thing, even though it seemed like the most useless of the three.
Uh-huh.
It could have been cool.
Yeah, okay, so we only did one of these, but we saw the others. The Gundam VR Daiba Assault, originally I thought like they would put you in the cockpit of a Gundam and you would protect Odaiba from like a Zaku assault or something.
Or
like
you could be a Zaku or something, you know?
But instead, you are a regular human being, a regular person, and Daiba is being assaulted by Zakus and a Gundam comes to save you. Even then, the VR component is that you are riding in the Gundam's hand.
And like it reaches down to pick you up.
That's right.
And so, and like they have this giant like thumb and palm setup that you can like sit on. It's weird.
Yeah, it's like a it's like one of those hand chairs you see, except the thumb is massive. It's a pillar that you basically have to like hug because this is all simulated motion as well, so it rumbles and moves and tilts left and right and stuff, so you have to hold on not to be thrown off. But yeah, so basically
yeah, I think we waited in that line for about 2 minutes before we realized that you didn't get to drive a Gundam.
That's
we're
right.
Like,
that's right.
No thanks.
Yep. So instead, we stripped down and got in our plug suits and went to Evangelion VR, The Throne of Souls.
Yeah, which was, I think, the most disappointing of the four, to be honest.
Yeah, because it was really just point and shoot.
Not even point, like because it was you were auto locked on to the angel the whole time. You had to look where you wanted to aim.
But anyway, so they had They had three quote-unquote cockpits. That was the setup here. You get in there, you lay full out like an easy boy or something. You get a joystick in either hand. There's no LCL, thankfully.
In the VR there was. You did the little intro thing, like you get sucked into the LCL. And when it goes over your head, like they start blowing air at you.
Yeah, there was an air blast. There's a lot of air blasts in a lot of these experiences. So you get in there, and there's an angel attacking. I believe it's the seventh angel. Could be wrong.
It was 10th.
10th angel.
I think it said 10th.
Okay. I think the angels switch timelines based on which series you actually watch. It was the one with the slicey dicey arms. So there was that. And you shoot it, you try to break its AT field, you run out of ammo, you go to a nerve building to pick up a new gun, and you have like a total of 2 minutes. The whole thing is about 4 minutes with like setup and like the aftermath, but the actual combat is 2 minutes because that's your battery power. And you try to break the AT field, and we didn't. I'm not sure if you actually can.
Field.
Yeah.
We broke the field, but we didn't kill the angel.
Yeah, yeah. So we ran out of time, and it didn't end well for us.
It ate our head.
So that was that. I'm not sure if it's actually doable or if everybody dies, just because that's the more nifty VR ending.
I'm sure it's doable if you can get a missile, which we never got. We never got one of those missiles that is supposed
to. I actually did. I got one at the very end, but like right before I fired, the time went up. So I was upset with that. So that was that. The Kamehameha thing was actually pretty interesting, but we didn't end up doing it. So this one was much more involved. So again, this was a different setup where instead of like Oculus Touch controls or anything, they had full-on like a palm sensor. So you would strap that to either hand, and you had to basically move your hand in the correct way to gather up energy and then fire it. And of course, like, the staff also wanted you to scream Kamehameha. They were screaming it themselves, so.
they screamed it at you when you went in, like, the little gate. They're like, right. Scream it with me.
That's right.
Kamehameha. Yeah. It was really kind of cool because you had, like, Goku and Krillin sitting there, like, coaching you through it.
Yeah.
Telling you what to do.
Yep. But we didn't do that, so. That probably would have been, like, the shortest wait, too. Like, no one was there.
Yeah, there's no line for that one.
Yep. But there was a huge line for the next one we went to. So yellow ticket items were the VRAT simulator Armored Trooper Voltom's Battling Dudes. Battling Dudes. We decided on just one mecha experience, so we didn't do that one. Extreme Courage Test Machine, the Big Fear of Heights experience. I talked about that in the first time I went to the pop-up store. That's where you get in a little harness and you walk along a plank to save a cat. Then the one we actually did was the Mario Kart Arcade GP VR.
Which was fun.
Yeah, it was good. So, as you might expect, the rig here was an actual go-kart style rig. You get your handle, your pedals, they strap you in. And this one also had wrist-mounted sensors, because rather than mystery blocks for the items, they had just the items themselves, the green shell, the banana, and a hammer, that you could just wave your hand up to grab.
Yeah, they were like floating on balloons or something.
Yeah. So you grab those and then you just launch them with another wave of your hand. Four players. There was Mario, Luigi, Peach, and Yoshi. Jason decided to be Peach because he's always Peach, apparently.
She's always the best. She floats and stuff. She's got the best jump.
Floats like a butterfly, stings like a bee. Stings like a bullet bill?
Stings like a parasol?
Stings like a parasol. Right, so, and then I was Yoshi, and We went out, and there was also Wario and Bowser. I think those were the only AI opponents. So go through. It's a completely like custom built track for this experience. I don't know if Nintendo themselves made it or if Bandai Namco did it with like their permission, but this was all made with Unreal, and it looked pretty great. I'm not going to say it looked exactly like you would see in any trailer for it, but it looked pretty great. You go through the course, there are giant piranha plants trying to eat you. There was the flying fortress at certain points.
There was swamps that come down.
Yep, in Bowser's castle. Is that Bowser's castle? I'm terrible on Mario lore.
The first one I think was just called Mushroom Valley, and then you go to Bowser's castle.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was like the pirate ship, which I forget what that one's called.
Yeah, I think that's just the Flying Fortress. I could be wrong. Like I said, I don't know Mario lore at all. I haven't played any games since 64. Right. So there was that, and I lost. I lost big time. I think I was just ahead of Wario, and that's about it.
Yeah, I think I got third. I was in first for a long time, and then I got like just beat down.
Yeah.
And then we like got in this giant hammer fight.
That's great. Yeah. We spent a good 20 seconds just bashing each other with hammers and not moving an inch. I think
Wario.
I think there's also a lot of rubber banding in there. Because different players were just getting different boosts of speed for no particular reason whatsoever.
That's true.
Anyway, yeah, that was the yellow ticket items. And finally, the green ticket. There was the fishing VR, Gigiesta. Oh, God. Yeah, which actually had a fishing reel. So,
and a net.
Yeah, and a net. So, if you're into that. Then, Interactive Cinematic VR Attraction Argyle Shift, which is another kind of mech shooter, which I talked about in the last experience I went to, which has a big-chested lady constantly in your face telling you what to do. And then, the one we actually did do was the Steep Downhill Ski Simulator Ski Rodeo.
I had fun with this one.
Yeah, it was good.
I go snowboarding a lot. I don't ski, but I snowboard, so I sort of like have a similar understanding, and it was really good. It was really sort of felt close to the real thing, or what I imagine skiing would be like anyways. It was similar to snowboarding anyways.
Go ahead, discuss that then.
Yeah, the rig is sort of looks like an elliptical machine, except the feet are skis. Right? And so you put your feet into these two little sort of foot-shaped divots in the skis, and you can either tilt the skis to the right, tilt the skis to the left, or sort of rotate the whole assembly. And if you know anything about skiing or snowboarding, that's basically how you turn, is not by like turning the ski itself. You sort of lean and let the edge, the difference in friction between the different edges of the ski turn you. And that's sort of like how you could do in this game. But at the same time, there's also different ways to where, like if you swing the tail end of your ski or your snowboard around, you'll sort of brake and turn harder, which you could also do if you tilted your skis and then turned your skis at the same time. You could have that same sort of braking hard turn feeling. And this is one where they really got into the wind blast because, well, you're going down a snowy mountain, so it's going to be there. The funny thing was, is like when, at the beginning and at the end, when you're sort of just sitting there and not going yet, you could see your breath like puff out in front of you.
Yeah.
And there were a couple of times where I swear to God, like they had a breath sensor and it was just happening when I was breathing.
Could be like, just a microphone.
It could be. It could be his microphone. But I was like, I was trying to like make the breath happen, and it seemed like occasionally like it would, which is kind of funny. I mean, it could have just been like a pure coincidence, but it would be cool if they did that. Anyways, yeah, so it was really cool. It actually sort of felt like that same kind of rush that I get when I go snowboarding, and I get a little too close to the edge, and I'm like, shit, I'm going to go back. I'm going to fall off. Oh, there's a tree. Ah, don't want to hit that. Yeah, it was really good. I really enjoyed that one a lot.
Yeah, the hit sensors themselves are pretty generous. I hit a rock once, but other times, like, I swear I hit a tree, but it let me keep going. But I did jump off a couple of cliffs.
Oh, yeah, I did too. I thought it was a jump. I'm like, oh, hey, there's a cool jump. I don't see anything on the other side, but let's jump it. Oh, shit, that's a 50-foot drop.
Yeah.
Oh, but then you get like halfway down and you're like, oh, I can land this. And then it just like goes to white.
Yeah. Yeah. The only thing that like you can't do. There's many things that you can't do that you could do on real skis. But the one that kind of stuck out to me is you cannot separate your skis whatsoever. So you can't do pizza, for example.
That might be a bit too much for people who've never skied before.
I think that's the first thing everyone learns when
but
you ski.
But if you've never skied and you go through this VR thing, you're like, what? Spend half an hour teaching me how to do this?
Pizza and french fries, yeah. for those who don't know, you make your skis in the shape of a pizza, so that will slow you down, and then french fries to go faster. Right. Anyway, yeah, so those were all the things we did there. There were a couple of other things, like there was a trap room experience and climbing as well, which used VR. But those are kind of separate purchases. They require extra money on top of the $4,400 that you're already paying. Mm. So, no thanks. Plus, we had already spent so long there.
We'd already been there for 4 hours and hadn't had lunch, so yeah, that wasn't going to happen.
That's right. There is a cafe there if you decide to have lunch. So yeah, overall, it was a pretty interesting experience, but I don't think I'll be back anytime soon.
Yeah, I'd recommend people to do it once, sort of like climbing Mount Fuji. You know, something you should do just to have the experience, but don't do it twice.
Yeah. Coming soon, Fuji experience.
Oh, God. VR Mount Fuji.
That's right.
They're going to put you on a treadmill for 8 hours.
They've already got the air blowers, so.
Others need a mister.
A mister? Oh, right, right, right.
A mister, that thing that blows mist.
I was like, a mister who? Mister
Bean.
Mr. Bean climbs Mount Fuji.
I'd watch that.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, it's a pretty good experience for 4,400 yen. What might not be such a good use of 4,400 yen is purchasing all the DLC for Metroid Samus Returns. So Metroid Samus Returns, we're getting into actual news here, by the way. Metroid 2 is getting remade as this Samus Returns game, with all new, like, cinematic featurettes and updated graphics and combat.
Probably an actual story.
Yeah. Initial, like, screenshots and kind of video clips do look interesting, and from what I've heard, Metroid 2 is just not a good game. It is not Super Metroid. Super Metroid is great. Metroid 2 is not Super Metroid.
No, that was a Game Boy,
right?
Only
exactly
like original Game Boy, like black and white. Well, green and black, but
yeah. So Super Metroid, great. Metroid 2, not. But anyway. So, Metroid 2 Samus Returns is coming out, and being a 3DS game, it's pretty cheap. It's $40, but the problem is it's coming with a couple of amiibos, and all Samus amiibos, or Metroid amiibos, I should say, since one is actually a Metroid, will actually unlock content for the game that is not a simple cosmetic change. Some of these are things that really should just be in the base version of the game.
There's one that like gives you an extra missile tank.
That's right.
One that'll give you like an extra energy tank.
That's right. So I had this right here, but then my web browser closed. Thank you, web browser. You're so nice to me. Okay, so I have all the information here. So, first off, let's talk about the older amiibo. These are for the Super Smash Bros. Game. So, the standard Samus amiibo in her armor that excuse me, that will unlock the missile tank, and after completing the game, you get concept art for in the gallery. Then the Zero Suit Samus will unlock an energy tank, and when you complete the game, you can listen to the soundtrack. So the sound test music, you know, BGM play. But then the two new amiibos, one is kind of a crouched armored Samus, and that will unlock another energy tank and unlock Metroid 2 art. And finally, the they're calling it the Squidgy amiibo, which is a Metroid, and it's apparently got an actual gel surface, so it is actually soft. Squishy. Yeah. Someone upstairs is doing something. Anyway, you get a soft Metroid amiibo, which will unlock a new difficulty mode called Fusion. And the Fusion mode also includes a new suit for Samus, which is her suit from the Metroid Fusion game.
It's a Zero suit. Or is it the Fusion suit?
It's the Fusion suit.
Oh, okay. I thought it was the Zero suit for a second.
No. So, because the difficulty mode is called Fusion, so Fusion mode,
yeah.
Fusion
suit. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah, but there is a hard mode that will be unlocked by completing the game. Nintendo has said this, but Fusion mode will be even harder than that. So that, like, all the other stuff, like an extra energy tank, okay, I'm not upset with that. But, like, the sound test, that should really just be in the game. That should just be a given. And then this extra hard mode, that should absolutely be in the game. Even if it's, like, only available if you complete hard mode, it should still just be in the game. It should not be locked behind an amiibo. So, especially because these amiibo are $11 a pop. Now, the Smash Brothers amiibo might be cheaper, because they're older and you can find them, like, used or refurbished or whatever. I don't know. So you might be able to pick those up for just a couple of bucks. But these new amiibo are going to be $11 each. And because they unlock things, there's probably going to be at least a little bit more scarcity. Especially that Metroid one. I can imagine that being pretty popular. That's... I don't like that. So, altogether, it's going to cost $44. Well, I'm talking, you know, again, $11 each. $44, that is more than the game itself, which costs an even $40. And so, last week, we were talking about the shadiness of Monolith and its microtransactions when it comes to Shadow of War. If you're gonna, you know, gouge people for money, I would much rather have microtransactions than this bullshit going on.
Well, it could be something like in Shadow of War. I mean, and this is just speculation, but it could be something like the amiibo will unlock it immediately. Like Shadow of War, you pay money, you unlock it immediately. But if you do a certain, like, put some work into it, you can unlock it maybe.
I mean, this news. This news is already, like, more than a week old, and Nintendo's only statement since then has been that there is a hard mode that you can unlock, and that's the standard hard mode, not the Fusion hard mode. They did say that Fusion would only be available through amiibo. So,
that's pretty messed up.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, like, it's. It's not the only Nintendo game that is known for this. Like, Fire Emblem Shadows of Valentia came with DLC packs that together cost much more than the actual game. Something like $60 to the $40 game.
It was, like, literally as much content as the original game itself, right?
Right. It was just bunches of map packs and things like that. Those didn't even give you a cute little amiibo to look at. So, Nintendo, we're not saying this is completely new to Nintendo's business practices, but I'm still not a fan of this at all.
But just for reference, can you give us a little refresher on what normally amiibos unlock in games?
Okay, so amiibos in game, I mean, it varies wildly from game to game, but I would say the biggest, like, kind of thing that you unlock across most games is just cosmetic stuff, like new costumes for characters. You can unlock various costumes in the Mario Kart games. I think you can even unlock racers? I'm not sure. In the Smash Brothers game itself, like, the amiibos could actually be used to kind of hold your data, and you could, like, level up AI fighters using that, so there was that going for it. In Breath of the Wild, you could use amiibo to like, kind of make loot chests appear. And the loot chests themselves were very simple things. Like, it would give you fruits and meat. But you could use those, like, every day. Once a day, every day. But, yeah, nothing like, obviously, like, you can only get this exclusive weapon if you have this Link amiibo. Yeah, yeah, there was nothing like that. Except for, there was one. There was Wolf Link, which allowed you to summon Wolf Link into the game once per day as, like, a companion. So that was, like, the only one. But, yeah, I mean, that's about the same of, like, that extra missile tank. So it's nice, but, you know, it's not like this should be part of the game, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely should be.
Yeah. Yeah, so come on, Nintendo. Come on, Nintendo. Right. Anyway, there's not a whole bunch of news, so that's all we're really going to talk about this week, because next week there is the Gamescom. The
Gamescom.
The game. I mean, I was going to say the Gamescom conference, but that's kind of like... redundant. Yeah, the Gamescom event also sounds weird. So, yes, Gamescom is next week. Gamescom being the biggest gaming convention in Europe. I believe it still surpasses Paris Games Week. But it does seem like a couple of people are gearing up for actual press conferences. I doubt we'll see anything kind of earth-shatteringly new there. We have gotten a couple of game announcements in the past. Ubisoft likes to make game announcements there sometimes because they are a European company. So I don't know. We'll see what comes out of there. More likely, we're going to just see a bunch of trailers for stuff that we already know about, like Wolfenstein or Monster Hunter World or whatever. But instead, we're going to talk about games we've played this week. So, I have played 3 games to Jason's 1, so I guess I'll do majority of the talking.
Yep, you go first.
That's right. First, I'll just start with something short and sweet, and that was Batman The Enemy Within, which is the latest game by Telltale. So, they had Batman... the Telltale series, and that was pretty successful. It was really nice. We talked about that. It's another Telltale series, 5 episodes where you follow Batman as he kind of cleans up the streets of Gotham. There you go. And it's kind of an origin story. Like, Bruce Wayne is already Batman, but, like, he seems kind of fresh off the beat. Like, Two-Face is new, Penguin is new, Catwoman is new. But, yeah, so those villains make an appearance. But the nice thing is that Telltale, they've kind of been given license to take the Batman lore and just do whatever they want with it. So there's a lot of stuff in that game, in the first game, that's just completely different from what most people come to expect. whether it be from villains or support characters. Of course, Bruce Wayne is still Batman, and he's still rich, and he has Alfred with him, and there's still Detective Gordon. But certain other characters have different changes, and there's changes to Batman's history and all kinds of stuff. So I'm not going to spoil any of that, but it's in there and it's interesting. But then we move on. Now we have chapter 2 in that story, which is actually kind of interesting to me personally, because the enemy within chapter 2 of the Batman story is like immediately following the events of chapter 1. I think I'm not completely up on Telltale's gamography, but I think that's the first time they've really done that. So Walking Dead has had multiple seasons, but Walking Dead season 2 was years after season 1, with Clementine all grown up and everything. But so season 2 of Batman is right off. Like, they're still dealing with the fallout of things that happened in season 1. And, of course, like, that also means that your choices from season 1 kind of have a more profound effect on what's happening in season 2. Going back to Walking Dead, all the choices you made in season 1, there were, one or two that affected things in season 2. But here, I think there's going to be more stuff that kind of takes on what you decided in the past season. The Enemy Within mostly focuses on the Riddler. The Riddler is not quite as campy as he has been in, for example, the animated series. He does still leave puzzle boxes and stuff like that, but he's apparently an internationally known terrorist. He disappeared for a while, and people actually presumed he was dead, but now he's back. The last time he was around, there was no Batman, so now there is Batman, and he's kind of upset that Batman is kind of infringing on his territory, so there's some stuff going on there. He does still do, the riddle me this stuff, but it's not even campy, it's just bad.
Really? How so?
Riddle me this, what has pointy ears and is about to die? When he's got, mm-hmm. A weapon pointed at you, I'm like, really?
That's not a riddle. Yeah. Not a riddle at all.
Yeah. I'm kind of paraphrasing, but it was pretty close to that. The puzzle boxes were much more in keeping with his style. So that was all right. And of course there are puzzle traps as well that you have to kind of find your way out of. And, those were interesting, pretty easy to solve, but still pretty interesting in how they played out. I will say one thing that's nice about this, is that it didn't suffer from the problem most Telltale games do, in that I never saw any stuttering. There was never any lip-syncing issues, and load times weren't nearly as bad. Dialogue was all right, one thing that was actually quite interesting at the very end was that, I'm not talking about story stuff here, I'm talking about mechanic stuff, but instead of simply saying, you chose this, and this many percent of people also chose this, that was there. But it also told you about your relationship with different characters. So, for a long time, Telltale has been doing, this person X will remember that, person Y will remember that, and blah, blah, blah. But now, it's person X is now standoffish with you because you sided with them on this issue, but then you turned around and went behind their back on this, and now they distrust you, and they'll begrudgingly work with you, but they don't trust you. Stuff like that. So it was like, they're standoffish. And I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. So it actually affects their personality and how, I'm assuming it's going to affect like how they talk with you and even maybe what options will be presented to you in the next one.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, it could be cool. It could all fall apart and be terrible by the end. I don't know.
Even that would be cool because your choices are affecting the outcome. Right?
Yeah. So again, this is just episode one. I don't have any idea when the following episodes will come out, but looking forward to it.
Yeah, sounds cool.
Yeah. Why don't you go ahead and talk about your game now?
All right. I played The Long Dark, which is a survival game, like a nature survival game. It's sort of like if you took Minecraft and Don't Starve and put them together and made a game out of it. Kind of. Actually, it's more like just if you made Don't Starve and put it in Alaska and took out all the monsters.
And made it first person, I believe?
And made it first person, yeah, and did that. Yeah, so yeah, it's Don't Starve in Alaska with no monsters in first person.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a survival game, and you're stuck in Alaska, and you just have to not die.
Yeah, so not like Minecraft at all.
No, not like Minecraft at all. Sorry, I don't know why I spit that in there. Probably just the first person thing, and you get to build stuff.
Yeah.
The game is basically, you know, don't freeze, don't starve, don't, you know, die of thirst, and don't die of hypothermia. And as long as you can do those four things and not be killed by bears or wolves, then you'll be okay.
What about that crucial fifth factor of survival? Boredom.
Which is boredom. Well, I mean, you're not going to be bored. You're constantly hounded by wolves and bears.
Oh, yeah. That's fine. Adrenaline, go!
I haven't met any bears in the game yet. That's because I'm not very far. Anyway, so there's two modes to play the game. There's the, I assume, what was the original mode, which is just like free mode, which is you're just sort of dropped in Alaska and just survive as long as you can. And when you die, then you die and you start over again. Sort of like, you know, Don't Starve. Although I think Don't Starve actually did have a boss that you could get to eventually and beat the game. I don't think there's a boss for this one. I think you just live until you don't live anymore.
Don't Starve had like an entire like shadow world that you created a portal to.
You could like eventually beat Don't Starve, but this one you can't actually beat it. You just, you know, eventually you will die of whatever kills you in Alaska.
Just like life.
And then I assume there's a new mode. I haven't really been following the release news on this game. I just saw it on Steam Spy and I thought it looked cool. And I guess the new mode is a story mode that they put in, which that's the mode I've been playing. I haven't really played the free mode. The story mode is actually not bad. It's not bad. The beginning areas are obviously like a hand-holdy tutorial kind of area. But I kind of feel like it's not quite hand-holdy enough. Like we talked about this a couple days ago, but like there's a part where you're climbing a cliff and you slip and fall and you sprain your ankle, and so you can't like climb the cliff anymore and you can't run, and so the guy's like, oh, my ankle hurts, oh, I need to get rid of this pain,
you need to build a new ankle.
Yeah, you need to build it out of wood and twigs.
There you go.
But the game says, okay, you need to make rose hip tea. You need to find some rose hips and make tea out of them. I said, oh, okay, sure. So there are some rose hips at the bottom of the cliff you just fell down. So I'm like, oh, okay, I'll collect these rose hips.
That's convenient.
Yeah, and now the game's like, okay, now make tea. And I'm like, how do I do that? Make tea. I don't know how to do that, game. How do I do that? Make the tea. What? So, like, there's a campfire. You can build a campfire, and at the campfire, you can like melt snow to make water. And so I went back to the campfire and I'm like, okay, well, maybe I could melt some snow with these rose hips. And there was no option to do anything there. I'm like, okay, well, maybe I don't have enough rose hips. So I went out and looked around the little, you know, beginner starter area, and I found some more rose hip bushes. So I took all the rose hips in the area and I went back and I'm like, I have no idea. So I actually had to look up online how to do it. And I guess like when you pick up the rose hips, there's like a little prompt that comes up on the screen that says prepared rose hips, like blueprint added to inventory or something like that, which is supposed to prompt you to go to the menu screen and then switch over to the crafting screen, which I didn't even know was there, and then craft prepared rose hips, which you can then take to the campfire to make the rose hip tea to fix your ankle. So yeah, there are just some things in the game that are just very, very not obvious and very hard to figure out. But I mean, I guess that's sort of the same way about like Don't Starve, right? There are a lot of things in that game that you just don't know unless, you know, you're really, really inquisitive or you look it up online. So yeah, I got out of the starter area, which was really hand-holdy. It always gave you enough wood. It always gave you enough of whatever you needed to finish the objective so it could teach you what to do. And I get up to the top and out of the ravine that you've crashed your airplane into. And I start going through the first just sort of real area. And I see a wolf, so I go by the wolf. And I go into a cave, and so I go through the cave and I find a torch. And I find some, like, new clothes, but they're all frozen. So I have to take the clothes to, like, the campfire and unfreeze them. But then when I unfreeze them, they're wet. So I got to wait by the, like, I drop them by the campfire so they can dry out so I don't get hypothermia. And so I've got like a new coat and all this stuff, and I'm walking down the road and like it starts to get dark. And so I'm at this point, like in the starter area, like you had found like lots of wood. But at this point, I think I found like 8 sticks. Like I didn't find any lumber. I didn't find any firewood, no like boxes I can break down into like reclaimed wood. I've got like 8 sticks, and it started to get dark and like wolves are howling in the distance and I don't know what to do. So like I duck into a car, which is like broken down on the side of the road, and I die of hypothermia overnight.
Oh,
so I try again. And like, I try to like this time I try to I'm looking for like a cave or some shelter when it gets dark, and I don't find anything, but I sort of find like this sort of like depression, like a little gully. And so I go down there and I try to build a fire with my 8 sticks, and like it takes me a couple times to get it started because I'm not using the right tinder. So I use the right tinder to get the fire started, and like with 8 sticks the fire is only going to last like an hour because I throw my torch in there too, and I'm like, well, I can't like live all night on an hour long fire, so I die of hypothermia again. So the next time I go,
I mean, that's what survival is all about, right? Trial and error. If you die once, you just try again.
So the next time I'm like, well, fuck it. You know, I'm just going to keep going down this road. Eventually there's got to be like some sort of shelter, you know, or like a cave, a conveniently, you know, placed cave in the game.
A family mart. Or
a family mart, or like an abandoned shack or just something. And I keep going, and no, it just keeps getting darker and darker and darker, and I can't see anything. Even like with my torch, I can see like 5 feet in front of me, and then I can't see anything past that because there's like smoke off the torch. And so like I get lost on this trail in the woods, and I'm walking around in the snow, and I guess like the game even counts when you're walking in snow to like it knows that you get colder in snow. So like I'm getting hypothermia just from walking in the snow, and I've lost the trail, and I die from hypothermia again, lost in the woods in the at night. And so yeah, I haven't even gotten to like the first whatever like area with people in it in the story mode, and I just keep dying. It's good, but man it's hard, which I guess is good because probably surviving on your own in the Alaskan wilderness is pretty fucking hard.
Probably, yeah, need to kill a couple of them wolves, take their jaws.
I tried that. I tried to hit him with a rock, and he just, like, he's like shook his head off and charged me. And I tried to, like, throw my torch at him, and he just sort of looked at it and then jumped on me. And then I tried to like run at him with the torch just in my hand, and he just sort of ignored the torch and jumped on me. Mm. Even though the game says like, hey, there's a wolf. Like the first time you see a wolf, it's like, oh, hey, there's a wolf. You know, you'll meet wild animals, so you can like, you can sort of scare him off with a torch sometimes, or maybe you can throw the torch at him, and that might work too. So like, I tried that, and like, nope, that don't work. Just don't fuck with wolves.
Yep.
Don't fuck with Alaskan wolves. Don't do it.
Well, once you can, just, you know, cut open a dire wolf and sleep in its stomach.
Yeah.
I thought they smelled bad on the outside. Mm. Right, so the long dark was truly, truly long for Jason Gibson. Yes.
Yeah.
Then let's switch to something bright and colorful. And actually, I have two games that are bright and colorful. One of them is for the, well, it's not only for the Nintendo Switch. It's for, I think, everything. I think it might be PC as well. I'm not sure. Sonic Mania is what I'm talking about. Sonic Mania, developed by Sega, but published on everything, like I said.
Yeah, it's on Steam.
Okay.
It's on Steam.
Okay, so Sonic Mania, for those not in the know, is not so much a new Sonic game as it is kind of a not even a remaster. It's a remix. So it's developed by Headcanon and Pagoda West with some excuse me. With some artistic, excuse me, I've got something in my throat. But anyway, it's got some artistic help from outside people, like the people who made Luftrausers. I'm trying to remember their name, Flambeer. They did some of the artistic assets. Anyway, the game itself, the developers have actually worked on previous Sonic games. Again, not really like the mainline, but they did ports. Like they did a mobile port of Sonic CD, things like that. So they have had experience in the past, kind of, you know, working with Sonic code. But there was a popular like. Thing going around on Twitter where it was like, you know, Sega says, fine, you guys think you can make a better Sonic game? You try it. And then, yeah, this game comes out and it's got like 8s and 9s, and Sega's like, oh, well, that kind of backfired. But, right, so Sonic Mania, like I said, is a remix of basically 1, 2, and 3. 4 was terrible, so we don't talk about 4. And everything after 4 was also terrible, so we don't talk about any of those. But 1, 2, and 3 were good, if not great. 2 was great. 1 and 3 were good. And I'm sure Chris will disagree, but he's not here, so hurrah.
Screw that guy.
That's right, screw that guy. We love you, Chris. Anyway.
Yeah,
we do. So 1, 2, and 3, I really like those. Like I said, 2 was great in my opinion. But anyway, this game boils the levels down to 12 zones, and each zone has 2 acts. And the first act of each zone is it starts out as almost a completely faithful recreation of the zone it's representing. So whether that be the chemical plant or the, you know, very first Green Hill zone. I forget the name, but they've got the oil field. That was one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah, with all the fire everywhere.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. So, yeah, lots of different things in there. And like I said, it starts out very faithful to the originals. So you get, like, the original music and the original enemies. But, of course, like, completely redone graphics. They aren't limited by 16-bit graphics anymore. So much brighter colors, much more nuanced coloration, better frames for animation and everything. I had a friend who actually works with like 16-bit systems and makes his own games doing that, and it's like those rings have too many frames when they're spinning around. So yes, too many frames is apparently a critique of this game. But right, so the action itself, once you get going, within like 30 seconds, you'll start noticing changes to each level. The further you go, the more pronounced those changes get. And one of the biggest changes is that the levels no longer have like just one way to get through. There was an image of one of the maps, I think it was just Green Hill Zone, but it showed like about 8 different like levels from top to bottom, and just depending on the springs you hit or the abilities you have, or just like what paths you might have fallen down, or you know, whatever you get through, you can go across these different levels, and they all lead to, you know, the Act 1 boss. But but I thought that was really interesting. So each time you play, you can kind of go across a different path. And so there's a lot of exploration going on. So a lot of people think when you play Sonic, it's just go right. Press right and go. And that can be a way to play. But Sonic does have actually a lot of exploration. You go around, you find hidden computers that have special power-ups, like the lightning shield. Shields are here. The Sonic 3 zip lines are here.
You can collect the Chaos Emeralds like in 2, right?
That's right. So the Chaos Emeralds are kind of different. You go into these secret maps that you access by finding hidden giant rings throughout the stage, and when you go in there, it makes like a Sonic Racing, Sonic R kind of low poly racing thing where you have to try to catch this this target. And then the biggest kind of tribute is to the old collect the blue sphere minigame from Sonic 3, but. It's fun. I like it. But like every time you hit a mid-level checkpoint, if you have 25 rings or more, a little circle of stars will appear above the checkpoint. And if you hit that circle of stars, then you go into one of these bonus zones. But the thing is, like, there are so many checkpoints throughout the game, and so it kind of gets overdone. Now, of course, this is all voluntary. You don't have to go into the bonus zone, but
I mean that's the way it was in Sonic 2. When I played Sonic 2, like, true. I could get all 7 Chaos Emeralds like in the first 2 levels, and I could be supersonic by the time I was in the chemical plant.
Right, that's true. But supersonic is not unlocked for quite a while in the game. You have to do these collect the blue sphere minigames to unlock coins. If you collect all the blue spheres in a mini game level, then you get a gold coin. If you collect all the blue spheres and rings in one of those levels, then you get a If you collect all the spheres, you get a silver coin. If you collect all the spheres and rings, you get a gold coin. But silver coins are all you need to do the various unlocks, which include things like abilities from the old games, such as the Insta Shield from Sonic 3, or different modes, such as there's a Mean Bean Machine mode, Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine, also known as Puyo Puyo. For those who don't know, Puyo Puyo was not originally released in the West as Puyo Puyo. Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine was the way they made that more palatable to Western audiences. Right, so, yeah, the The remix stages are really cool. I like those. But there are also new stages, like the Studiopolis, which is based on, like, TV stuff. You enter, like, these little media vans, and you get shot through different satellites, kind of, which is kind of cool. And the bosses are remixed as well, so they have different characteristics, different actions. Yeah, there's a lot of varied kind of battles going on, and it's cool. So I really like it, and the remixed nature of the levels makes me go like, okay, you know what, I've got 5 minutes or 10 minutes, I'm gonna play through a zone real quick, see what I can get up to this time. Once you complete the mania mode, which is kind of the quote-unquote story mode, you can just you get level select on your save file, so you can just go back and forth however you want. So good stuff.
Seems good.
Yep.
I like Sonic too.
I like Sonic 3.
Mm.
Alright, so the other game that is super colorful and bright is Matterfall. Matterfall is the latest Housemarque title, which is really weird because Housemarque does not put out games super quick. They're not known for it, like one every 2 years or something like that. But suddenly, here we are, with Housemarque releasing two games within the space of just a few months. Next Machina was their last one. Right, anyway, like, that being said, this is definitively a Housemarque game. So it has all the tropes you could expect to see, which means voxels everywhere. This is a game about voxels, both red and blue, and the story of how one set of voxels can overcome another set of voxels, and I think that's the story. No, the story is actually about some kind of alien energy being used to power systems, and then it turns out the alien energy is actually bad and takes over a lot of stuff and has a life of its own. So, and the alien energy is made up of voxels. So,
nice.
That's the red matter. But you are a special agent, a cleaner, who is out to destroy all of these voxel things with your blue voxels. It's a side-scrolling shooter, but not like Resogun in that it has a wraparound map or anything like that. It has full-on platforming action, so it's kind of like a Contra sort of game. With 2.5D backgrounds, and it looks amazing. Explosions are great. It's colorful. It's bright. It's fast-paced, but God almighty, it is hard to control. So imagine you are holding a standard controller. The key buttons that you'll be using are R1, or the right bumper. That is your jump, not X like any normal game would do. So R1 is your jump. You automatically fire just using the right stick, so wherever you point that, you'll be shooting. So R1 is your jump. You can do a double jump as well. Your left bumper activates your strike, which is kind of like it's a dash, but it also emits a kind of blue burst that will stun enemies and destroy all projectiles. The only thing that, like, you can't pass through is red matter. If you hit red matter, that will hurt you. But everything else, you can. And then your left trigger is your matter jet. So your gun becomes kind of a matter projector, which is very important because there are several sections in the game where there are, like, these outlines of platforms, but they aren't filled in. So you use your matter jet to fill in those platforms. It's an instant thing. You don't have to, like, you know, wait for a progress bar or anything. You just go like, boop, and platform's there. But it is a timed thing, so they will eventually disappear. Now, this becomes kind of a challenge because, like, in gigantic rooms, you'll have to jump, shoot, make a platform, land, jump again because there are enemies, strike, stun them, shoot them. When enemies are stunned, they take more damage and also give more points, so it's important to use that strike as much as possible. But you can't spam it. It does have a cooldown, but you never know what that cooldown is, so you kind of just have to do it with muscle memory. So, you jump, fill in a platform, land on that platform, jump, strike, hit another platform, jump again, strike, do all this, and you're doing around. Your right trigger is also your secondary fire, so that can be like grenades or homing fire or something like that. You're doing all that, but like to really effectively do this, you're kind of going to need your index and middle fingers on the bumpers and triggers.
Because you have to jump and fire at the same time, right?
Yeah, so, just like an hour in the game just causes ow. Now, that being said, it is a pretty short game. It's only got three worlds, unless there's any more to unlock after that. I haven't gotten that far, because it's still pretty hard, so, as you can imagine from what I just described. Each world ends with a boss, and the bosses are also pretty hard mechanically. And that said, it's still fun. It's amazing. Like, I love it. The music is great, and it also includes several other Housemarque tropes, like a bored voice tutorial lady who says, like, you know, when you enter certain areas have zero gravity, like you can go in there and she'll just say zero gravity. There are also humans to rescue, which is another Housemarque staple. And when you rescue enough humans, like, they'll give you new abilities that you can equip, such as, like I said, the grenade. So there's lots going on. It is definitively a score attack kind of game. So you go through, you kill enough things, you'll build your multiplier, but if you take damage, your multiplier drops. It's not completely gone like it is in Resogun. It just drops. And then you can keep building it up. I will say, like, even though it's hard, there's a generous checkpoint system. And when you go to a checkpoint, like, it completely refills your health. There's no, like, live system, so you can die 3 times, 4 times, 10 times. It doesn't matter. You'll just go back to that checkpoint. So that's pretty nice. Yeah, so that's Housemarque's latest.
Seems good.
Yeah, it's good, but hard. Very, very hard, especially on the hands. So, all right. I think that's all the games we have this week. So, let's move on to our ESRB quiz.
Okay. Dun-dun-dun.
Let's see. This game... rigmarole for everybody. The ESRB quiz, I go to the ESRB website and find a game that has a description, so that generally means they're within the last decade. From that description, the description generally describes why it's rated a certain level. From this description, I pick out a number of hints that I go from 4, 3, 2, 1. 4 being the most general kind of hint that could possibly be there, thus hard to guess what that game is, and then 1 being super specific, such that if you don't know what the game is by then, what are you even doing here? Do you have your gamer card? Can I cut it in half? That kind of thing. So, ESRB quiz, let's go! This game is from 2012.
Okay.
2012. And it is rated M.
For mature.
Right, M for mature. So, hint number 4, most general. Some levels depict burning corpses, bodies impaled on stakes, piles of limbs, and dead villagers. During the course of the game, a succubus creature is depicted topless.
Dark Souls 2.
Dark Souls 2 is not correct. That is
succubus in that game. I don't
know. Nice. There's Spider Lady.
That's one.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess was there Spider Lady in two?
Yeah, she was. She was like trapped in the corridor.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I forget her name though. But yeah, she's not really a succubus. She's a spider. But also, yeah. Dark Souls 2 was 2014, not 2012. Okay. Anyway, hint number 3. Getting more specific. Battles are accompanied by slashing and flesh impact sounds, screams of pain, and frequent blood splatter effects. Creatures often explode into bloody fragments as multiple enemies are dispatched at once.
Is this a Castlevania game?
Is that a guess?
Is this like Lords of Shadow?
Is that your guess?
Yeah.
It is not Lords of Shadow. Mm. Right. Although creatures do explode in that game. But from 2 years late, you've gone to 2 years early. Lords of Shadow was 2010.
I'm homing in. I'm getting there.
That's right, sort of. Right. Hint number 2. More specific. From a three-fourths overhead perspective, that's isometric, basically, players traverse dungeons and use swords, axes, and magic attacks to kill a variety of human enemies. There you go. Good job.
Isometric. That's easy, man.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like I said, you get more specific hints. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And then the final hint, number 1, this is an action role-playing game in which players assume control of a mortal hero, e.g. witch doctor, barbarian, wizard, who must defend humanity from a demonic invasion. So, right, Diablo 3 was the correct answer. Released on May 15th, 2012 for PC and Mac.
Which I hear is still pretty fun to play ever since they sort of revamped it.
Yeah, and they've made a new update where all DLC is free, I believe. Well, no, it's the Ultimate Evil Edition is basically the same price as the game.
Right.
Anyway, yeah, that was developed and published by Blizzard. So, right, Diablo 3 was that. So, that is correct. 2 points for Jason for getting it.
Yay.
On hint number 2. And now for games coming out next week. So, just a few. We have for PS4 Chromagun, which is a port of a mobile game from 2015. Also, Mages of Mistralia. Is that Mysterious Australia? I don't know.
No idea.
Australia is pretty mysterious. I'll give you that.
Mysterious Australia.
But I don't know if they have mages. Unless wallabies are mages?
Could be.
Could be.
Pretty mysterious.
That's right. Anyway, we have Minecraft, the story mode, coming to Nintendo Switch. It's already out for everything else. The Escapist 2 for PC, PS4, and Xbox One. That's kind of a top-down, pixelated prison break game. Uncharted The Lost Legacy for PS4. That's the standalone Uncharted game featuring Nadine and Chloe. White Day, A Labyrinth Named School. It's coming to PC and PS4. This is actually a remake of a 2002? 2000, I can't remember. 2001, there we go. White Day, A Labyrinth Named School was a 2001 survival horror game out of Korea.
Hmm.
And
do they have White Day in Korea?
Yes, they do. And originally published for PC, it eventually came out for mobile in Korea. They decided, well, we're gonna remaster it for PS4, and so that will be coming out next week. I just like the name White Day, A Labyrinth Named School. It was kind of interesting to me because they had originally said that they were going to make this game for PlayStation VR, which, you know, anything for PSVR I'm kind of into, especially like survival horror. But then they later said that there were several segments that just wouldn't fit well with VR, so they're going to make a sequel, which is nice, called White Day Swan Song. For those who don't know, White Day is a month after Valentine's, so March 14th, and that they kind of split the genders. So on Valentine's Day, girls give boys chocolate, and then on White Day, boys give girls chocolate if they received chocolate from them. So, yeah.
Right.
So that's... I know it's in Japan and Korea. I don't know if it's in any other countries, but yeah. Anyway, other games coming out in Japan. Let's see. We have The Lost Child, which I've heard about, but I forgot the developer. Stuff. Anyway, I know it was made by the people who did El Shaddai. But I forgot. Nah, yeah.
Can't help you, man.
Yeah. Sorry. No, can't. Well, fine. Anyway, right. So other games coming out are F1 2017 for PC, PS4, and Xbox One, along with Madden NFL 18, which, apparently has like a full on story mode.
Cool.
Where you learn to play the ball of foot. For PS4 and Xbox One, along with One Piece Unlimited World Red Deluxe Edition. That's a lot of words. I'm not sure which One Piece game that is. That could be the Musou, that could be just a fighting game. I don't know. Anyway, other games... Oh, let me scroll up quick. Okay, Bleed for PS4. Just an action game. The Book of Regrets for PS4. Don't know what that is. Dungeon traveling, maybe. Duck Game, which is it's one of those Adult Swim games. It seems to have like a lot of kind of different genres mixed in. Mostly it just seems kind of a silly game to play, but probably like action based. Anyway, Jack and Daxter, The Precursor Legacy, so that's a PS2 port. Then we have, if you like Naruto Ultimate Ninja Storm, boy, is this the week for you. So we have Naruto Ultimate Ninja Storm, Naruto Shippuden Ultimate Ninja Storm 2, Naruto Shippuden Ultimate Ninja Storm 3, Full Burst. And Naruto Shippuden Ultimate Ninja Storm Trilogy, which is all three of those games. And finally, Naruto Shippuden Ultimate Ninja Storm Legacy, which is all those three games, plus Ultimate Ninja Storm 4, which came out this year. That's a lot. Next we have for just the Vita, Never End, so I'm not sure if that's a port of a game that's already on PS4 or anything, but just the Vita. Then for PSVR, we have Soul Dimension, which is a puzzle game. PS4, Spartan, 2D platformer, and Super Combo Man, fighting game combat. Swap Quest for PS4, which is it's a port, puzzle game. Thimbleweed Park, which is a kind of point-and-click adventure, except obviously you can't point-and-click on PS4, but it's made by Ron Gilbert, creator of Monkey Island and Maniac Mansion. I am having trouble with my tongue today. It does not want to work. And finally, for PS4 and PS Vita, Velocity 2X Critical Mass Edition. So that's Velocity 2X with all the expansions and special features. So
cool.
There you go. Those are all the games coming out next week. And thus, we are finished for this week, guys. But if you want to check out videos and reviews and news and stuff like that, you can always go to our website at kaijupop.com. You can also follow us on social media sites. We are on youtube.com/kaijupop and twitter.com/kaijupop. Or you can follow us personally. I am at Kyoshi Banzai.
I'm at Gibsaurus.
And we want to thank you for watching, listening, liking, and subscribing. Thank you, guys. And we will talk to you soon. Goodbye.
See ya.